Welcome everyone to another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. If you haven't already, be sure to check out some of our sister shows that we've got going on. We've got the Front Office Podcast, which is coming to you guys weekly, breaking down all the latest happenings in the world of sports. We've also got the Dynasty League Podcast, which is launching on August 3rd, but we've got all sorts of teasers and special events going on leading up to that first episode launch. So if you haven't already, cruise over to whatever social media platform is your favorite and toss Dynasty, D-Y-N-E-S-T-Y, League a follow. Today, we are going to be joined by the one and only Eric Erlandson, who is the Lightning Insider, who is going to be breaking down everything you need to know about the Tampa Bay Lightning, how they have gotten to where they are now, up 3-0 on Montreal, could close it out tonight and go back-to-back for their Stanley Cups. Quite a ways they've come since they got swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets. We all remember that a few years back. So we break down that, how that ended up being a rallying point for the team. Moving forward, who we can look at for expansion draft, targets, UFAs who might be walking, and what the 2021-22 version of the Tampa Bay Lightning might look like. Then we are joined by the Capital Rebels Women's Tackle Football Program, which launched this past year. Unfortunately, due to the pandemic, their season got cut short, and they are going to be part of the CCWFL, which is as close to a professional women's football league as you will find in Canada, and they are going to be competing against other teams across Ontario and Quebec, and they're very excited to hit the field and get that going. They might even have some games over at TD Place, so some really cool stuff that we're going to be breaking down on the Ottawa women's sports scene. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Up first, the Tampa Bay Lightning insider himself, Eric Erlandson. Joining us today on the podcast, Lightning insider Eric Erlandson. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good, Kyle. How are you?
I'm doing well. Obviously, mood in Tampa Bay and Lightning fan nation there has to be feeling pretty good on this Monday morning. What's sort of the vibe these days amongst the Tampa faithful?
Anticipation, and not just for a hockey game tonight. We got a tropical storm kind of coming down on us. And, you know, not that there's anxiety, but you never know with tropical systems that come through. But no, the focus is on the hockey, obviously. You know, after missing out on everything last year with the bubble situation and not being able to be a part of it, you know, I was watching the game from the watch party inside Amalie Arena on Friday night. And, you know, it's the energy, even for a game that's taking place 1,000 miles away, was strong. And I imagine tonight it's going to be even better, anticipating what could happen and potentially a back-to-back Stanley Cup for this team. It's you can sense it. I've seen so many flags flying on cars around town over the weekend and everything else. Fans are anticipating something really good happening tonight.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, is there something in the water that Tampa Bay residents aren't letting us know about? I mean, you win the cup last year, you're back in the finals this year, the Rays were in the World Series, Tom Brady and the Bucks win the Super Bowl. Like, what is going on in Tampa Bay in the last 365 days?
That water is filled with the tears of the disappointments of years past of Tampa sports. I mean, you think about the Buccaneers, they went winless in their first two full seasons in the NFL, and the Rays and their struggles in the early days and, you know, 10 years into the franchise before they started to have any sort of success as they did in 2008. Even the Lightning, yeah, they won the Cup in 2004, but you go from that first playoff appearance they had in 96 up until really 2014, you know, you had a couple of seasons in there, but for the most part, it was, and there were a couple of years, the Lightning might have won 17 games all year. So this is payback. This is what the Tampa sports fan was. Their due is paid, I guess, is what you could say. And unprecedented success after watching cities like Boston enjoy all of this issue, the success through the years. The Tampa sports fan, for really, let's face it, it's a transient market down here. Mm-hmm. Not many people are actually from here. They're from Michigan. They're from Massachusetts. They're from elsewhere. They have loyalties they grew up with elsewhere. But you're seeing so many generation of true Tampa sports fans being born now because they're tasting success, and it tastes really good.
Go figure. All those Boston parades stopped once Tom Brady started coming down to your neck of the woods there.
The Brady effect.
No kidding. But I mean, if we look at sort of the playoffs as a whole here, Montreal, bit of a shock to get there because barely a 500 team in the regular season in the North Division. Us up here in Canada, we couldn't figure out because we're only playing Canadian teams. It's like, okay, is the North Division good? Does it suck? Are we going to get steamrolled as soon as we get into the playoffs against the American teams? Like, we didn't really have a good feel for that, especially because, TSN and CBC and all that, all we're seeing is the Canadian content. You can barely even get the American highlights up here. But Montreal, they shock Toronto, obviously down 3-1. They sweep Winnipeg. I don't think anyone, even the most hardcore of Canadians fans, were really betting their mortgages that they were going to get past Vegas. Lo and behold, they do. Like, what is Tampa doing differently to be up 3-0 and not just like eking out wins, but like looking dominating compared to, the Montreal Canadiens right now that Toronto, Winnipeg, Vegas didn't do? Like, is there anything that, as far as systems or something that they're really focusing on that those teams didn't do?
Well, the Lightning have, this determination level about them, and that probably Toronto didn't have. Even up 3-1, Toronto didn't have it, right? And Montreal took advantage of it. They won a couple of overtime games, got themselves to a game seven. And, with Vegas, as good as Vegas is, and I'm one of those ones who would never have bet my mortgage on Montreal winning that series, especially after watching the way game one played out. I thought, oh, that's it. That's it. They might not even have to come back to Vegas for another game watching that first one. But Vegas doesn't have the depth that Tampa Bay has. They've got Stone and Pacioretty and Marchessault and those great wingers. They don't have strength down the middle. The Lightning have the strength down the middle. And I mean, look, let's face it too, Marc-Andre Fleury gifted game three to them, right? With the gaff and letting Montreal tie that game and the Canadiens win in overtime. But I think once we got to this point, to the Stanley Cup final, first of all, as good as Carey Price was in those first three rounds, and Carey Price probably intimidates just about every other team in the league before the series even starts, the Lightning were not going to be intimidated by Carey Price because they've had success against him. Like, they've had a lot of success against Carey Price. So you take that out of the equation, and then the Lightning's depth, their determination, their ability to get through the middle areas of the ice. Montreal wants to slow the game down. They want to force you into making mistakes. And the Lightning did that in game two. And the Canadiens still lost the game. So I just think that there's an understanding and a legacy at stake for Tampa Bay here in this series. They're kind of putting all of that together. And then it never hurts to have Andrei Vasilevskiy in the net. Because again, as good as Carey Price is, this is probably the one series that Canadians could ever go into and maybe not have the goaltending advantage. It might be even, but they don't have the advantage. And again, you put all of those together, I think that's how you get to a point where Tampa Bay has the 3-0 series lead heading into game four.
Also doesn't hurt to have the apparent lucky charm of Patrick Maroon on your squad there too. Could be going 3 for 3. Like, what are you want to talk about runs for Tampa Bay sports teams? Like, quite the run that Patrick Maroon himself has found himself on here those last couple of years. But if we go back a couple of years ago, you guys had that amazing regular season, one of the best in NHL history as far as putting up points and wins and all of that, and then ultimately get bounced in the first round in somewhat humiliating fashion, I would say, based on, expectations going into those playoffs. Do you credit that as a real turning point for this franchise where they had all the strength in the world on paper, but until they sort of went through that, that really taught them what it was they needed to do to succeed in the playoffs? Like, was that a pivotal point, do you think?
It's a seminal moment for me for what's happened these past 2 years for this team. And it actually happened in game one because they're up 3-0. I mean, they're off to the races, right? Okay, here they go. Powerhouse team getting ready to take care of the eighth seed. They're just going to cruise into round two. Lo and behold, they lose that game. Not just lose it, losing a regulation. So you give up four straight goals and lose the regulation. They were shell shocked and they didn't know how to recover. And, I don't know if it's because, the adversity factor. Okay, they didn't face any adversity during the regular season, right? Like, they were just on cruise control. They were beating teams left and right. They had, two separate 10-game winning streaks in the season. They could outscore their problems. but they were in a different state of mind once they lost game one, and they just couldn't recover. They didn't really recover until late in game three, and by that time it's too late. You get no prayer at that point. And I remember specifically after game one, John Cooper coming out and saying that they were so worried about scoring the fourth goal after being up 3-0, they didn't pay enough attention to keeping the first one out of their net. And that's why I think that's kind of that moment. That was that clicking moment. And I think you have to give Julien Brisebois and the organization a ton of credit, because the easy thing to do would have been, that's it, coach is out, we're cleaning house, the core's not working, they can't win. We've had this great success, three conference finals in 4 years, but it's time to move on. We had the best regular season, record time regular season, and we couldn't win a playoff game, not let alone a series. They couldn't win a playoff game. But it sent them into soul searching mode. And how do they play the game differently? What approach do we need to take a little bit differently? What kind of a mental attitude do we need to do? So they went in with that. They had some struggles the beginning of last year, but once they hit just after Christmas, and it started with a game against Montreal. They had beat Florida just before Christmas, and then they have Montreal the first game in after the break. They were outshot 20-3, I think, in the first period. And I was even getting messages, John Cooper going to be fired after this game. What's going on? They were down, I think they were only down 2-0 despite that. And they came back and won the game. And that kind of fueled that first 10-game winning streak they had last year. So you could start to see it all come together. And then that led to the trade acquisitions of Barclay Goodrow and Blake Coleman that kind of changed the identity of their team a little bit, gave them a different look. So I think it all stems back to that series loss against Columbus, where it just sent everybody in the franchise into a mode where they had to look inside themselves. And that's where that resolve has come from, right? Like, if you want to use a nice analogy, their metal was forged from the fires of disappointments from the past. And that's exactly when that started.
And I mean, you touched on it a little bit earlier. Vasilevskiy is probably the number one goaltender on the planet right now. And that's not something that Montreal is used to, not having that advantage in net. What point, though, do you really think that he went from being that good prospect of, okay, he's a solid goaltender, maybe top 10 in the league, to truly elite? Because these last, I would say, two seasons, I don't think there's anyone who could hold a candle to him. Like, his record's almost unassailable right now, where he is probably the number one goaltender in the league. And, did you see a switch get flipped at any point there that you saw, started thinking, okay, he's figured it all out? Like, we're really seeing him come into his own there.
I think with him was just a steady progression. Like, we're still talking about a guy who's what, 27 years old, a 2012 draftee. His work ethic is unmatched. You talk to anybody in that locker room, and they've had to scale him back. He works so hard to get to where he is. But I just think it was just slowly, steadily, he started to form this, much like the team, this mental fortitude, that he learned from Ben Bishop. I mean, when Ben Bishop was here, he remembers, and then he's talked about it before, that, and something Ben Bishop had to learn, if a goal goes in, you gotta let it go. You have to move on to the next one, and you can't worry about it. And that took a while for him to understand, because he did take those things personally. I mean, even talk to players now, and they say, yeah, when we lose a game, he takes it personally, which is probably a good reason why. I think they're 14-0 in their last 14 games following a loss in the playoffs. The big part of it is because of him. So I don't think there was a moment in time, and that sent him to this place that he's at, is probably the top goalie in the game. I just think it's just a steady progression of a prize prospect. Because look, there were a lot of people who thought at the time, though, why are you trading Ben Bishop? Why are you trading this guy? He's been a Vezina finalist. He's been the backbone of your success. But they knew that eventually Vasilevskiy was going to be the guy. And his athleticism, it's so hard to beat him down low. He covers so much ground. He's probably as fast post to post as any goaltender in the league. So you start to add some of that stuff up, and some of the saves that he made. I mean, the save he made on Kyle Palmieri early on in the series against the Islanders, kind of that behind the back stop, or the reaching back behind the back stop. It's just, he's got the full package in a goaltender, from athleticism to mental fortitude to ability to make those type of wow saves to. And much like Carey Price, he makes the difficult saves look routine, and that's not easy.
Yeah. Is the Conn Smythe his to lose, or do you think there's an outside chance that a point or a Kucherov or something sneaks in there and steals it?
You know, I don't want to answer that question just because I am on the committee that has a vote. So I don't want to give away anything. But those three are probably the top candidates, Vasilevskiy, Kucherov, and Point.
Fair enough. You know, salary cap issues has been something that has been sort of a hot button topic. And, you know, north of the border, the Montreal fans seem to grumble more and more about it, the worse the series goes for them.
Just like the Islanders fans did.
Exactly. I'm sure if they were up 3-0, they wouldn't care nearly as much about them. But all that aside, like, the Tampa Bay Lightning did nothing wrong here. It's a loophole that exists in the rules. But all that being said, do you think that's something that the league takes a look at maybe in the off season to try and close that loophole? Or is this just a, hey, no harm, no foul, let's all move on from it type situation?
Well, as much as fans want to complain about it, as much as some of the media want to complain about it, you know who's not really complaining about it? General managers. You know why? Because they want that at their disposal. They want that ability. And look, if this was an 82-game regular season, it wouldn't be an issue because he would have been back before the end of the regular season. It just happened to be a 56-game regular season that allowed them, you know, we all know the off-season situations with Tyler Johnson. He was asked to submit a trade list. He was put on waivers twice. So it caused some strain on the roster, but it did allow them to keep the roster together. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, there's not many teams that haven't utilized that LTI to some advantage of theirs. I mean, even the Islanders, when they lost Anders Lee, guess what they did? They used that LTI space with his injury to go out and bring in Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac. You know, they wouldn't be able to do it without that situation. Short term, obviously, injury that happened during the season, obviously. You know, but I don't see, I mean, it wasn't that long ago when Chicago utilized that to their advantage with Patrick Kane when he suffered that broken collarbone. And there was questions about whether he was ready to come off LTI before the end of the season. And you know, some teams were complaining about it then. You know, the vote to overturn the LTI rule was, I believe, 28-2 at the time. 28 teams said, no, we don't want to change this. And two teams said, yes, we do. Ironically enough, one of those teams that wanted to change it was the Lightning. But I just don't think, even with as much attention as this has gotten, I don't think there's a GM in the game that wouldn't want to be able to keep this and utilize this to their advantage. You know, and look, as you said, there's nothing nefarious here. They did lose their MVP quality player for an entire regular season. There's no guarantee you're going to make the playoffs. Yeah, they're a deep team, but there's no guarantee. I mean, they missed the playoffs in 2017 after back-to-back conference finals. So nothing's guaranteed. They didn't want to go through this situation, but it wasn't a situation they were able to utilize to their advantage. And, you know, now you've got a guy who's back-to-back 30-point seasons in the NHL in the playoffs, which only two guys have ever done. You might have heard of them. One's Gretzky, one is Lemieux. So you start to put your name in that category, you see what kind of a player Nikita Kucherov really is.
Yeah, no, he's in some all right company there with those two. But you've said it multiple times here, and it's something that you really, the word depth comes up time and time again when you're talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning. And a lot of that depth isn't from, you know, household names. It is the Barclay Goodrows and sort of those third, fourth line guys who might not shine during the regular season or make an all-star team, but come playoff time just seem to take their game to another level. Like, is there a type of player or a certain mold that the Tampa Bay front office tries to target when they're looking for those depth players? Like, is it speed? Is it, you know, Corsi or advanced analytics wise or anything like that?
There are two things when Steve Yzerman came on board and Julien Brisebois continues it now in his third year as GM. When they go to the draft, they tell their scouts, find me players with a high hockey IQ and find me players who compete. Mm-hmm. We'll work with anything else. I mean, Braden Point, his draft year, the knock on him, man, he probably can't skate at the NHL level. And you watch him now and you think, how in the world did anybody think he couldn't skate at the NHL level? I mean, the way he moves and his acceleration, and I mean, he's one of the top skaters in the game. So they will work with anybody that might have a deficiency in their game that can be improved, but you can't really teach hockey IQ, and you can spur competitiveness, but you either have it or you don't. Mm-hmm. So those are the two qualities that they look for. And that's, and that includes when you start to go on the pro level. Like when they signed Yanni Gourde coming out of the San Jose organization, when he was cut loose mid-year by the Sharks organization, what's the one main attribute that Yanni Gourde has? He competes. I mean, he competes as hard as anybody in the league. So that fit their mold too. And, Blake Coleman fits that mold. I mean, he competes as hard as anybody, and so does Barclay Goodrow. And so it's a combination of all that, but it starts with the amateur scouting. You look at the number of players who are on this roster that were drafted post 2011 and on. Kucherov was a 2011 draftee. Vasilevskiy was a 2012 draftee. The Sorellis, the Points, those guys, they're all drafted with those main attributes. Can you compete? Do you compete for the pucks? Do you win wall battles? Do you do those things? And can you think the game? And those are the two things that really makes the depth of this team even stronger, because you have the high-end skill, but then you get these other guys that can do all those other intangibles, if you will.
Yeah, one of the hardest things to do as a champion, obviously, is in the salary cap era, trying to keep everyone back together. And so, obviously, they're not going to be able to completely run back the roster. So, looking ahead to next year, and we won't say anything about whether they'll get it done tonight or not there, but just even moving ahead to next season, like, who are some names who you think might not be a Tampa Bay Lightning next year, whether it's due to free agency or even the expansion draft? Who are some names who might be on the outs?
Well, you got to look at anybody that's making, some decent amount of money, right, in terms of salary cap hit. They don't have any big restricted free agents to sign this year, but they're not going to be able to re-sign David Savard. They probably won't be able to sign Blake Coleman. Not even sure if they'll have the money to re-sign Barclay Goodrow. I think they'd love to be able to keep him around. Now when you get to the expansion draft, you're going to lose a player, and you're going to lose a quality player. It's just going to be a question of where does Seattle go? Because ideally you'd like for them to, you like to play up, hey, Tyler Johnson, he's from the state of Washington. He's a homegrown kid, even though he's grew up 4 hours away from Seattle, but he is a Washington born player. Would you take that and his $5 million cap hit, or, Andre Palat and his $5 million cap hit with only 1 year left, or Alex Killorn or Yanni Gourde, or, any of those group of players. So you would, I think if you're Tampa Bay, when it comes to the expansion draft, you let the chips fall where they may. Seattle takes who they take, and then you work from there. But I mean, you have to look at those mid-range forwards, because forward depth is something they still have in the organization. They have an Alex Barry-Boulet who made his NHL debut this year after a couple of really good years in the American Hockey League. Same thing with Taylor Radish and Boris Kachuk, a couple of second-round draft picks from a few years ago. So you have guys that can step in. Ross Colton, who's made an impact as a rookie this year. So you have forward depth. So those are the areas you probably have to look to try and move out to alleviate the cap issue, because this was the year it was supposed to hit the 56-game schedule, and the hip surgery and Nikita Kucherov sort of alleviated that a little bit. But it's coming. I mean, they're already sitting over the cap right now, I think, with 18 players, 17 players, somewhere in that range to sign. So I think you have to look to anybody that's making that middle tier type money to be moved out to create an opportunity, because you want to keep as much as the core together. Like we saw Chicago do this, we've seen Pittsburgh do this. So you want to keep the Kucherovs, the Stamkos, the Hedmans, the Vasilevskys, the Points, the Sorellis, those type of guys together as sort of your core, and then kind of work around there.
Yeah, and not to go too much down an expansion draft rabbit hole here, but do you think this time around teams will have learned a little bit from the Vegas expansion draft, where teams seem to be tripping over themselves to try and, oh, we'll give you this pick and da 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 if you select this player? And I mean, Anaheim is the perfect example of that blowing up in their face, where they actually threw in capital for them to take Shea Theodore off their hands. But like, do you think this time around it is going to be a lot more of the teams just letting the chips fall as they may and Seattle takes who they take type thing? Or do you think there'll still be a healthy contingent of teams who want to steer that conversation, let's say?
I think you're probably going to have a good number of teams who are going to want to be like the Florida Panthers, and hopefully it doesn't blow up in their face. Hey, take Jonathan Marchessault, please. We'll give you Riley Smith. Take Jonathan Marchessault. Well, how'd that work out? I think that there are teams that are going to be looking to do that, but boy, you're already starting to hear the price tag Ron Francis is looking for. So you might see teams back off because of what happened. I mean, boy, the Seattle has something to live up to after what Vegas has been able to accomplish as an expansion team. I see teams being a little bit more cautious when it comes to that. Let's face it, sometimes you fall in love with your own prospects. And I think that's what's happened a lot with what happened when Vegas came into the league. So I expect that we won't see as many side deals, especially with Tampa Bay's situation, if we want to kind of narrow it down to what they're up against. Look, they don't have a first round draft pick this year. They don't have a second round draft pick this year. They don't have a fourth round draft. Like, so they don't have a lot of assets even to think about giving up in order to have Seattle take a specific player. That's why I think with Tampa Bay situation, they'll just, okay, this is our protected list. Take one. We understand we're going to lose a player and then go from there. But yeah, Ron Francis is already starting to try and make those maneuvers, right? We're only a couple of weeks away from that actually happening.
If they do end up getting it done tonight, I mean, they'll make back-to-back cups. In terms of modern sort of dynasties here, if you're talking about, the Chicago Blackhawks, the LA Kings, the Pittsburghs, the Detroits of the world there, like, where do you sort of rank this Tampa Bay team as far as, where they could even still go? Like, how many more seasons of windows to compete do you think they have? Do you think that window is barely open after this year, or do you think they've got another 5, 6 years with this core still in tow?
Well, the window will be open, but they're not going to have the depth. That's what the salary cap is supposed to do, right? Sort of water down the, not water down the talent, spread the talent out. So, but when you've got a Hedman, when you've got Vasilevskiy, who's just now hitting the peak, as a lot of goaltenders do, he might not even be at his peak, which could be scary enough as it is. When you've got that sort of group, you have a chance. I mean, Chicago was still, competitive for all those years, even after having to shed some contracts, that last cup year, and then bring in guys at the end. Like, they brought in Andrew Ladd back at the end. They brought in Brad Richards on a cheap contract that year. So you can do it, but it's not going to be as easy. As far as where this team ranks, I mean, back-to-back cups, if they pull this off, it just doesn't happen in the cap era. That's why we've only seen it once. We've only seen a couple of times teams even get back to the Stanley Cup final the year after winning or even losing the Stanley Cup final. I mean, look what's happened to Washington. They finally win their cup in 2018, haven't been out of the first round since, right? So it's hard to do. It's a hard league to win in. So I think winning back-to-back cups, and on top of that, if they can do it, you're talking about two cups in 10 months, right? Like, that's two playoff grinds in 10 months. One in a bubble, which has to be mentally straining, as you heard a lot of the players talk about coming out of it. And even this year, with the COVID restrictions that they've had, they weren't in a bubble, but they kind of were, and we saw how even a team like Tampa Bay, who didn't have really, they only have one player really go on the COVID list all year, and that was Curtis McIlhenny in January. But they had their season disrupted twice because of what happened with Dallas before the season started, and then the first month what happened with Carolina. So they had to have their schedule rearranged a couple of times. And so it's as mentally tough as a situation as any team has been in to do it. And so I think that's just going to put a stamp on the legacy of this group and this team during this era of finally breaking through, fulfilling the expectations that they had. We'll see what the future holds, but if they're able to pull this off, I mean, winning back-to-back cups is not an easy thing to do. That's why we haven't seen it just the one time since the late 90s.
Obviously, such a physical grind, but you hit on a good point there as well, too, of just how mentally tough it's been over the last 10, 11 months or however long it's been here. But in some senses, it's tough to gear yourself up to try and climb that mountain all over again the next year when you're the defending champ, right? You're probably going to have a nice long summer and enjoy yourself and all that fun stuff. And when it comes back to October, you got to hop back on that bike and try and keep going again. But for Tampa, they're in a bit of a unique situation because if they do end up winning tonight, I mean, you just had, I think it was the Tampa mayor said, oh, if you don't win tonight, like, feel free to come back and win. And I think in sports, you're just going to win whenever you can win. There's never a let's win at home type thing here. But, they'll be in a unique situation where there was obviously the bubble, couldn't have anyone in there. And if they win tonight in Montreal, they weren't allowed to have friends, family, whatever, join them there. So, do you think there'll be just that extra little bit of, okay, yeah, we went back to back, but we still haven't had that full fan experience and on our home ice and all the pomp and circumstance that would go around it in a normal year? Like, is that going to be a big motivating factor for some of these guys who have been to the mountaintop back to back years potentially there?
It can never hurt to find some extra motivation, right? Like, if that's the way it plays out, There'll be, I guess, a few family members, especially the guys who are from Quebec. They might be able to have some of their family in, and maybe some of the family from Ontario can get in there. And, just as we saw last year in the bubble, they had some family members that were around. Obviously, they weren't allowed to charter the flight and get the families from here in Tampa into Montreal for the game tonight. And, that's probably something that's kind of swirling around their head. But like I said, this team, the way that they have that metal that, I mentioned earlier, they're going into tonight with that approach. And John Cooper even said it yesterday. It's about winning, not where you win, right? Despite what the mayor down here said, I know a lot of people have jumped on that for good reason. Because you would talk about extra motivation. Maybe that's Montreal's extra motivation. Look, the mayor says to lose this game on purpose tonight. But I think that there can be that. On the home ice part, though, like we haven't seen that much lately, right? I think Chicago might have been the last team to win a cup on home ice back in 15. Right? I think both of Pittsburgh's wins in 16, 17 were on the road in Nashville and San Jose. St. Louis won it in Boston. Washington won it in Vegas. Of course, last year, Tampa in the bubble. So that's just kind of an oddity that, a lot of teams haven't really experienced since then. Even Chicago's first two cups were both won on the road, right? So that's where that it doesn't, it, you just want to win, you don't care where you win mentality comes from. It's going to be interesting, though, no matter what happens tonight, what happens on Wednesday? Because we have this storm. It's supposed to start hitting tomorrow night. It's not supposed to be a hurricane, but it could still. I mean, we've seen it down here. These tropical storms can bring some punch and bring some damage. What could that disrupt teams getting down here? Could it disrupt Tampa Bay from getting here if they win tonight? We probably see a boat parade, but what's that going to look like if there's a storm that's come through? I mean, there's a lot of things that we should never have to worry about with a Stanley Cup final. But it's 2020, it's 2021. I guess we should prepare for anything.
Yeah, absolutely. After the last year we've had, nothing would surprise me at this point here. All right, last question before we let you go here. Obviously, you just mentioned it, the boat parade. If the Tampa Bay Lightning win the Stanley Cup, do we see a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning throw the Stanley Cup from one boat to another, Super Bowl style, like Gronk to Brady there? Or do you think they learned their lesson from the blowback from that?
I don't think you'll see anybody toss the cup from boat to boat. A little bit bigger to handle. It's in a couple of pieces, as we know. I'm sure Phil Pritchard and the cup keepers will say, "Please don't do this." But we did see Alex Killorn last year with his famous Ock Ock jet ski. Did have the cup on his jet ski out in the channel there by the convention center last year. And I did have a chance to ask Phil Pritchard. I said, all right, Phil, be honest with me. At any point, were you worried that that cup was going to fall off the jet ski and end up in the bottom of the bay?" He said, "No, not at all." So yeah, I guess if Phil Pritchard's not worried about something like that happen, I guess we should all be okay, because there's probably nothing that guy hasn't seen when it comes to anything that's happened with that Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I was gonna say, over the years, it's been at the bottom of a few different bodies of water there. Back way back in the early 1900s, it was at the bottom of the Rideau Canal there. Here in Ottawa. So, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. For those that are listening that want to tune in and see any of your coverage or any of the stuff that you're doing there, where can they sort of connect with you, whether it's on social media or websites or anything like that?
Yeah, so there's a few places. First, I have the website, lightninginsider.com. There's yearly plan and monthly plan if anybody wants to check out my work there. Podcast, Lightning Insider, just where anybody finds podcasts, just look for it there. Where else? So Twitter, at Eric_Erlandson. That's Eric_ERLENDSSON. I have a Facebook page, Lightning Insider, as well. And then I still have books from last year's Stanley Cup title. If anybody's interested in a commemorative book, I can personalize a book for anybody that's interested in one of those. Just email me, Eric@lightninginsider.com. Again, that's Eric with a K.
Beautiful. Have you been working on a follow-up book in case they win the title again this year?
I wish that was the case. The publisher that published the book last year said that they found that when teams win back to back, the interest just isn't quite as high. So it doesn't look like, unfortunately, there'll be a book this year if they happen to win.
Well, that's perfectly fine there. I'm sure it's a exhausting process to put that together. So maybe your fingertips there can use the rest. Who knows? The way they're going, that it might be next year again too that we're talking about a similar result. So, Thank you so much for joining us today, and best of luck with tonight. We'll see what happens and whether the Tampa Bay Lightning can complete the sweep or if they're going to be fighting the tropical storm heading back home for game five.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Thanks, Kyle.
Before we sit down with our friends from the Capital Rebels, wanted to talk to you folks about our good friends over at MyBookie. You can get to their website one of two ways. The first way, head over to dinespressbox.com, check out some of our great articles and fantastic feature pieces that we're putting up there all of the time. Then we've got all sorts of links that'll take you directly to the MyBookie website with pre-populated codes so that they already know who sent you. Or you can head directly to mybookie.ag. But make sure you use the promo code DINESPORTS when you sign up. There's also all sorts of first deposit bonuses, not to mention some of the friendliest lines on the internet. So for all of your sports gambling needs, head over to MyBookie. Tonight, our parlay that we are going to be working with, we are going to take the San Francisco Giants money line, and we are going to take the Dodgers Marlins total runs over on the evening. Sprinkle those two together, see how we do. One last week, who knows? Let's try and go two for two. As always, must be 18 or older. If you have problem gambling, there's all sorts of resources on their website as well too, where you can get help, Gamblers Anonymous, etc. Please gamble responsibly. Now let's take it over to our interview with the Capital Rebels Football Club. Joining us on the podcast tonight from the Capital Rebels Women's Tackle Football Program, we've got Katrina Paymont and Sean Murphy. Katrina and Sean, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, awesome to be here.
First and foremost, for those that are unfamiliar with what the Capital Rebels even are, or might not even be aware that Ottawa has a women's tackle football program, like, what are you guys? When did you sort of get started? Like, what's the Coles Notes version of your origin story, so to speak?
So the Capital Rebels is basically myself and my co-founder, Sonia Hadzi. We were two women who really wanted to play football with nowhere to go. So we started knocking our heads together, getting some ideas and just building connections with people like Sean and other individuals. And we worked on building the very first team in the Capital Region of Canada. So it was a first, nothing like it ever existed. And we kind of just started progressing slowly, recruiting a few players, getting a bit of social media out there, getting, you know, equipment donated to us. And we just slowly built the team from there on. And the team consists of every and any type of woman from 18 and above, whether there's experience or no experience in football. We're really just the beginning process of women's football in Ottawa.
Amazing. And so in those early days there, like, what would be a typical, you know, practice or scrimmage? Like, how many women were coming out in its first couple of weeks of inception there? Are we talking about like six, or are we talking like 60?
So we started at the very beginning of COVID. So that probably had a slight effect on our numbers. But right out of the gate, we had anywhere between 16 and 20 women showing up. And we had a pretty consistent number of around 16 throughout most of our practices, even though our season ran through most of the summer, which most people were on vacation, and ran through a lot of the beginning of COVID. And we had our 16 loyal players that no matter what, rain, shine, COVID, no COVID, they were out on the field and they were learning with us.
Yeah. And obviously you ladies with the rest of the sports world here affected quite a bit by COVID, to say the least. What were some of the things that you guys had to pivot or try and do? And did you have any major tournaments canceled or games or anything like that? Did you have to go virtual? Like, what has your COVID experience sort of been like over the past 365 days?
Absolutely. So, it was tough. Yeah. Sorry, Katrina, I'll grab that one. It started out with that one practice we had in a dome, and great turnout and everything looked good. And then literally that week is when all the restrictions were put down. So I came up with a plan that really worked out well, that we started doing Sunday morning virtual Zooms that was talking about the basics of football. I kind of looked at it and I talked with Katrina and Sonia and said, hey, you know, we were out there and we were ready to, you know, you know, do agility and throw the ball and catch the ball and all this stuff, but nobody knows the game. We have women who are coming into this who had, some had seen a game on TV or live, some had never even seen a game, but were just interested in playing. So we scaled it right back to the basics, and I did presentations, you know, an hour to 2 hours at a time every Sunday for probably about 8 weeks, where it was literally, here's, you know, what a field looks like, and here's what a yard is, and here's what a first down means, and here's, you know, just the very basics of football. And I think in a way, it you know, that COVID experience was beneficial. So although COVID had a negative effect, it really was a positive for us in terms of teaching the game and teaching the basics, so that when we did hit the field in the summer, that everyone sort of had an idea of what we were talking about when we started coaching.
Recently, obviously, news has just come out that there's going to be actually a new league that is forming, and not just in Ottawa, but across, you know, Ontario and possibly even some Western Quebec and all of that as well, too. It's the Central Canadian Women's Football League. So, number one, which teams are sort of involved with this? And obviously, this is a league that's going to be in its first couple of years, so there's going to be some growth and all of that. But how many teams are involved, and sort of what's the five-year plan as far as, do you think you can get up to 12 teams, 20 teams? Like what's sort of the future for women's tackle football, do you think?
So part of the goal for getting a league in Quebec and Ontario is that we're the largest population collectively in terms of Canada, we're actually way behind the eight ball with women's football. There's already an existing Western Women's Football League and a Maritime Women's Football League, and both have been around for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. So the key there was to let's get that last piece of the puzzle, and hopefully in the very big future is play a national championship. But for right now, the focus is that there are two existing teams. So there's ourselves being the Capital Rebels, and then there's the Montreal Blitz, who've actually been around for a solid number of years, I think 7 to 10 possibly as well themselves. And they actually played in an American league prior to this, mm-hmm. and then ended up kind of homeless. And so together, between ourselves and them, we worked with Football Ontario and Football Quebec to form this league and see what we could get. So 100% those two teams are the anchors right now. And then we have commitments for spring of 2022 for with teams in the GTA, a team in Sudbury and Sault Ste. Marie. And then obviously ourselves in Montreal, and then a team in Quebec City, and a team in Trois-Rivières. So out of the gate for spring 2022, we're looking at 5 to 7 teams who have committed to fielding a team for them. Obviously, we're going to continue working to see if we get more. And, you know, I think a lot of the growth can happen on the Ontario side when we look at just the, you know, the GTA and Southern Ontario sort of population, that there's still opportunity there to have more than just one GTA team. So that's the short term. Long term, yeah, like I said, have as many teams as possible and then play that sort of national championship if we can. And a big part of this as well is that Football Canada has always had a women's national team. Mm-hmm. And they've played national tournaments. They play every 3 or 4 years, I believe it is. They play against, you know, teams from Team USA, a Team Mexico. There's a Team Australia. There's a Team Germany. There's some various. They have like a world championship. So they're in 2022. There is a planned one that was delayed because of COVID that will happen. So a lot of what we want to do as well is have ID camps for that. And we want to be able to identify women that can go into those tryouts for Team Canada and potentially represent Quebec and Ontario and represent the teams that will be in the CCWFL and be on an international stage as well.
If we're going to have an Ottawa team in this league, you've got to have a GTA team there for the classic Ottawa-Toronto rivalry up at the 401 there. So glad to hear that they're going to be involved. But, you know, also just really nice to hear that it's not just a standalone league, right? Like there's going to be a sort of filter system of an ability for the women to progress all the way up to, you know, a national team or represent their country on an international stage and all of that. So, you know, you just mentioned 2022 there, but maybe Katrina, like you're a player yourself, so you might have a good feel for this. Like if there are just some women who are listening to this right now or thinking like, huh, you know, I've never played tackle football before, but I'm a pretty good athlete myself. myself, and I've always loved the sport and I want to get involved. Like, is there a certain type of athlete that you've seen pick up the sport maybe a little bit quicker than others? Like, are pole vaulters great football players, or, you know, shot putters or hockey players? Like, what's sort of been your experience as far as seeing athletes transition into a new sport here?
I'd say women in general. I've played with the boys. Obviously, growing up, there weren't any women's teams. I've coached young men. I've had a chance to work with women. And I'd say women in general pick up the sport a lot faster. And we have women who came out who had never played a single sport or team sport in their lives. And as soon as they were giving just enough guidance to know in which direction they had to go, they learned everything extremely quickly. And it wasn't, like I said, they had all sorts of different backgrounds, from absolutely no background in sports to women who have played flag football and had an idea what the sport was like. We've had hockey players, rugby players, soccer players. There's no specific sport that makes someone a better football player. All it takes is someone who really wants to learn the sport. And so if people just want to show up and learn and get out on the field and start practicing and come on to the Zoom sessions and stuff like that, if they're willing to put in the work, anyone is able to join the team without any question.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a father of two young girls and a lovely wife, I can attest that they are definitely the brains of the operation, and they pick things up way quicker than I do. So I'm definitely the knuckle dragger holding them back, and they probably would pick things up far, far, far superior than I would. But, like, what would you sort of gauge the level, overall level of play at? Like, are we talking this would be sort of like a semi-pro league? Is this an amateur league? Is it sort of two streams where you also have options of, you know, women can come out who just want to get the exercise, practice, you know, whatever, red shirt, but I'm not quite ready for a game yet. Like, how does the sort of nitty gritty of the actual Rebels work heading into that 2022 season when you'll hopefully be playing against other teams?
It's definitely competitive, right? We're going to be playing, a schedule where there'll be a playoff system, and there'll be, you know, a two-tiered champion type of thing, an A and a B, however you want to name it. We haven't quite decided that in the league yet, but there will be, definitely that. So although yes, it's fun, and we want people to experience football. We want women to be able to have a place to come and experience the game that we love. It is going to be competitive though. So to label it as semi-pro or anything like that, I'm not really sure how to quite label it, other than to just say it will be competitive, and it will be, we had some women out there, whether they had experience or not, that were pretty fiery and were ready for the contact, which was, you know, really, really good to see. And I think that's, you know, really where we want to go, is we want to be able to build women up in terms of, you know, build their confidence and build, their ability to say, I can do it too. And it's not just a man's game. And we want to be competitive.
So where are you guys situated out of right now? And maybe it might be different now because of obviously COVID and restrictions and all of that. But in non-COVID times, like, where would your home field be that you guys operate out of?
So we actually practice at a few locations before COVID. But as of right now, we would call Jillian, our home field. However, for question of convenience for some of our players as well, to make it convenient for people, because we have players both on the Ottawa side and the Gatineau side. Mm-hmm. So we do as well practice on the Gatineau side. So in Buckingham is mostly where we will go and practice when it comes to the Gatineau side.
Yeah. And just recently, Kyle, we also got a working relationship with OSIG and the Red Blacks, and they do have field time available for us. We have to work around, you know, obviously there's a lot of requests for that field, and they have to, you know, take priority with the Red Blacks. But there is opportunity for us to be there, whether that's practices or whether it's games or whether it's going to be some of these ID camps we talked about. But that's definitely something that we have in our back pocket that we're working on. And we literally just got that confirmation from them this week. So
There you go. Breaking news on the Dine Sports podcast here. Making the
announcements. Exactly. You heard it first here.
Yeah. Well, that's extremely exciting too, right? Because obviously a huge portion of any time you're starting up, whether it's a new business, a new league, a new venture, whatever it is, a large part of it is going to be visibility. It's getting eyeballs on the product and all of that. So if, you know, let's just say it happens to be all your games at TD Place and you work around the Red Black schedule or whatever, that would be a huge boon, not only for your team, but the league as well too. You got to figure.
Absolutely. So Ottawa being a little bit central in terms of the fact that we hope to have, you know, the teams ranging from Quebec City all the way down to potentially, you know, GTA or even Southern Ontario and Northern Ontario, Ottawa will be a nice central place where we've discussed, it's not finalized, but with the CCWFL, we're talking about potentially having either a round of playoffs where all the teams would come here, or the championship game being here, as well as possibly some of these ID camps for the Football Canada national team.
If there's someone who's listening right now who wants to get involved, like, what's the best way to find you guys, or the best process to sort of reach out to you guys to get more information or possibly even sign up for one of your upcoming programs?
So we have our website, capitalrebels.ca, and we actually have just finalized our first, I guess you could call, camp for the 2021 season starting July 10th. We're starting our training camp, which is going to be flexibility, agility, speed, getting out on the field and just getting the women initiated in the sport and what it takes as far as conditioning and preparation. We have the privilege of having a CFL, NFL guy coming out to train with us. So our website would definitely be the best place. If not, as well, we have our social media. Obviously, we have Instagram, we have Facebook, and then just send us a private message. There's my number as well that's accessible. We have our email address, which we are multiple checking the email account. So we definitely respond pretty quickly on there. So basically social media in general, we're out there and we're open, accessible, and we're always there paying attention to our messages.
Obviously, a few things up in the air still, but do we have a tentative, if all the stars align, when your first game will actually be?
So our official season as far as the CCWFL is going to be in 2022. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a schedule for that yet. However, we are hoping to get together with the Montreal Blitz towards the end of this fall season and try to get some joint practices in with them, which we're hoping to have as very public events where women who might be interested in joining a team but aren't sure of the decision, aren't comfortable with it yet, they want to learn more, they'll be able to come out, watch us practice, see what it looks like. And if they want to come join as well, they'll have that opportunity.
Perfect. Well, Sean, Katrina, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us tonight. We really appreciate it. For those that are listening, be sure to go and check out their website, social media, and more. We wish you guys all the best, and you guys, along with the rest of the sports world, you know, fingers crossed that we get some good news in the coming weeks and we can see you guys back out on a football field sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for the time, Kyle. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's a wrap for another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. As always, a huge thank you goes out to both of our guests today. First, Eric, for sitting down with us and talking all things Tampa Bay Lightning and their quest for back-to-back Stanley Cups. And then the Capital Rebels talking about their upcoming season and hopefully returning to the field in 2022 in some sort of a competitive fashion and actually getting their league games up and running. So fingers crossed for them. As always, if you like what you heard, make sure you like, comment, share, subscribe. We've got various social media channels you can check out as well too. All of our handles are the same. They're all at Dine Sports, sports with an S at the end of it there. Give them a follow. All sorts of behind the scenes content as well on our YouTube page. So if you haven't checked that out already, make sure you hop on over there and see some of the stuff we've got going on, as well as toss us a subscription there too to be on top of all the latest news that we are bringing to you guys daily. Until next time, folks, have a great evening. We'll see if the Tampa Bay Lightning can close it out tonight, or if Montreal will live to see another day. Take care.